this is John Davison, and you're listening to Yes Music Podcast.
Welcome to episode 29 of the Yes Music Podcast. No, your ears did not deceive you. That was John Davison introducing this week's episode. John Davison, the lead singer of Yes. As you will hear, we owe this exciting addition to the Yes Music Podcast to Ben Craven, uber prog maestro and one of the most generous people you could ever hope to meet. So thanks, Ben. I'm your host, Kevin Mulryan. Please remember you can get involved with the podcast at the site www.yesmusicpodcast.com, where you can subscribe through RSS, via iTunes, by email to the blog posts and episode updates. You can read and then comment on show notes or blog posts. You can follow the show on Twitter at Yes Music Podcast, send the show an email, show@yesmusicpodcast.com, or upload a file via the link on the right-hand side. You can leave a voicemail message in two ways and appear on the show yourself, by calling 0844 579 6949 using the mailbox number 39417, or by recording it straight onto the website using the record a message button on the extreme right hand side. You can also download for free the Stitcher.com app if you've got a smartphone. Paul Tomé was back on the voicemail again this week after listening to the Rarities episode, and this is what he has to say.
Kevin, it's your long-lost friend from the States, Paul Tomé. How are you? Hey, great. Just wanted to stop by and say hello. I love the show. The Rarities, very, very, very good point. Although I did appreciate the remastering that took place on the other songs, which, you know, anybody who had the store-bought and vinyl or the first-cut CD. I mean, there was a big difference there. But yeah, the couple rarities, it's give or take. Although I do like them. I do like them. I like the insight of that. You know, they kind of open the door a little bit and give you a tease about what they were doing at the time. I really, really appreciate that, actually. So anyways, yep, it's me again. Keep up the great work. We love hearing from you, and we'll talk to you later.
Very interesting points, Paul. Thanks so much for taking the time to record that audio. Please keep them coming. I also need to mention Kaylee10 from yesfans.com, who is listening out for the Ben Craven interview. It's great to have you along. So as you'll have guessed, this week's episode is an interview over Skype with Ben Craven about the Yes show he attended recently. And here it is. Okay, once again, I'm delighted to speak to Ben Craven right the way across the world. I'm in Stratford-on-Avon in Warwickshire in the UK. And where are you, Ben?
Kevin, I'm in Brisbane in Australia. It's about 9 p.m, which is an excellent time for me, and thank you very much for making this possible.
Well, I'm really looking forward to it. So the reason you're on here, well, there are two reasons you're on here, actually. The second one we'll come to in a minute, but the most important thing was that you've just been to see Yes very recently.
It was last Friday night in Sydney.
Excellent. And tell us about the venue. People probably won't know Sydney, and they certainly won't know the venue. From what I could see on the YouTube clips that I've watched of the event, it looked like a kind of old fashioned auditorium.
Well, I think that's what it is. Now, I'm not intimately familiar with Sydney, but from what I can gather of this venue, it's about a 2,000 seater.
Right.
It's an inspirational design which fuses eclectic elements of Gothic, Italian and Art Deco design to produce an exquisite theatre which can truly be described as a palace of dreams.
I think you're probably reading that from somewhere, Ben.
I could be, but if that means anything to you, I mean, that's... It really was. It was a gorgeous theatre. As I said, with 2,000 seats in there, you felt like every seat was a great seat.
Right, and it was pretty crammed.
I heard it was sold out.
Yeah.
And it should have been.
Yeah, yeah. So it wasn't a barn. I mean, we've talked about this before on the podcast. Not sure, yes, nowadays at least, come over very well in barns, but this was a lot more intimate than that.
Yes, I don't think we use the term barn very much in Australia. I've heard the barns and sheds. I don't know what the equivalent is in Australia, but for instance, in 2003, when they played in Sydney, it was the Sydney Entertainment Centre, and I suspect that's maybe holds 10,000 or so. And I don't think they might have, you know, they might have had 5,000 there, but I assume this time, I guess the promoter made the choice that I guess they felt without John and without Rick, they'd go for a smaller venue. I can't tell. But I mean, the thing with the venue was full, and to have them playing in that intimate setting was extraordinary, really.
So tell us about before the concert. Were you there early this time?
I got there an opening time. I think I stood in the merchandise line for about 10 minutes trying to, you know, get something to take away. I didn't go for a t-shirt. I was after a tour, after a program actually, and the closest they had, no, there were no programs. There were some tour posters from 2009, so I grabbed one of those.
Right, a true fan. Well, tell us about the atmosphere though, when you were queuing up and as people went into the venue.
Well, it was definitely a buzz in the room, and definitely predominantly middle-aged men, which I think we're used to at Yes concerts. And it was actually when I got in there, I spoke to the person in the seat behind me, and his wife was there, and I think she spoke about the Yes widow syndrome.
Right.
And that she was a Yes widow, but she was, you know, she was happy enough to be there.
That's great. So let's get on to the performance itself then. And they started off with, I believe, Young Person's Guide to the Orchestra again, which is the Britten piece rather than the more traditional Firebird.
It wasn't Stravinsky this time, no.
Yeah, how did that come over?
Well, I think everyone just started applauding from the beginning there. We knew what was coming up. I think it was also a deliberate, you know, that was a deliberate move, I think, to make sure it wasn't, you know, this is not quite the classic Yes that you'll have been used to, and we're doing this intro a little bit differently as well.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And that brings us on to the performance, and you know, we could talk about the whole band, and we will do, but let's start with John, the new John. How was he?
John was excellent. Really, they started out, it was kind of insidious the way they started out with Yours Is No Disgrace, because as you know, most of that song is three-part harmonies until it gets to the end. So you really couldn't hear John in isolation to start with. But if you'd closed your eyes, it sounded like, as you say, the Yes Choir. It sounded right. It sounded good. And then finally, at the end, where you got to hear John on his own, John was great. His pitching was great. His voice is uncannily, and I think naturally, like John Anderson. And he seemed very, very comfortable as well.
Right. Working from YouTube videos that people have taken on their phones and so on is really difficult for us, and I think even more difficult for the band, because it doesn't give a true picture of what went on at all. However, I have heard a few comments about Chris's backing vocals and whether those, I mean, you've just said that the choir sounded right in Yours Is No Disgrace, but did you have any concerns about Chris's backing vocals?
No, not at all. I mean, I don't think he was mixed that highly. I mean, I guess people in different places in the theatre will hear different things as well. I mean, maybe I haven't read the comments about Chris's backing vocals, and maybe those people were closer to the front with the foldback speakers.
Yeah, well, I think in fact it may have been people just watching the YouTube video, so it's probably irrelevant.
You know, Chris may not be perfectly in tune all the time, but he's Chris, goddammit.
Yeah, absolutely.
He sounds like Chris, and just the fact that it is Chris, you know, brings a smile to my face.
Absolutely. Well, someone who's not been there the whole history of the band, of course, very much, is Jeff. And there are a couple of things about Jeff. First of all, I've seen a quick video of him playing the pipe organ in the Sydney Opera House, which there was just there's only a 30-second clip of him playing the opening of Vidor's Toccata, and very unfairly. I mean, this is one of the reasons I've stayed away from places like Facebook and YouTube as long as I have, because the comments are just, you know, the usual mix of people raving about Jeff and those who are being really abusive and totally missing the point. What happened was the interviewer threw a few titles of classical organ works at him and asked him to just play it without music, without any preparation or anything. So he just noodled around on the organ. But the comments, just some of them are ridiculous, saying, you know, pointing out the inaccuracies of his notes and so on. It's just a waste of...
Oh, so he didn't immediately nail it the first time, and which reflects badly on him, yeah.
Which is ridiculous. But it's great to see him enjoying himself. You know, he's, you know, he rivals Chris in the size of his character and his commitment. But I did also hear about some new equipment. I don't know if you noticed him using any different equipment or new equipment to the last time he played.
Do you mean the last time recently in the last two, or do you mean in 1980 the last time?
No. To the last tour.
No, I didn't. I did jump up and take a photo of the stage at the beginning of the show before anyone came out, but I'm not intimately familiar with Jeff's setup,
I'm afraid. No. Okay. So how was his performance in comparison with the last time you saw him?
Well, this was the first time I've seen Jeff.
Oh, is it? Right, yeah, okay.
Actually, I hadn't experienced Jeff live before. I mean, I think I had heard some of the recordings on YouTube from his earlier tour last year. But the main comment I had about Jeff was he was very, very faithful to the original recordings. And he really made an effort to get the correct sounds. So where there was an original, you know, song that had a mellotron on it, Jeff was using the proper mellotron sounds, like on Heart of the Sunrise and You and I. Even the right flavour of Hammond organ, where, say, you know, Rick would take liberties with that, probably because he wrote the original part. But those parts that Jeff didn't originally write, I think he was just very, very faithful, reverential to it. He was, you know, fulfilling a purpose, trying to get the arrangement right.
Right. And did that go as far as his... You know, there's always this great feeling that certain Yes fans have over, no one can play Rick's parts like Rick does, no one should try, Rick should be in the band. But did you feel that not just the sound, but also the way that he performed it was appropriate?
Look, the way he performed it was fine. I mean, it's a different Yes. We know it's a different... Whenever there's a different player, you know it's a different Yes. And I don't think it's... Well, it is valid to compare the two, but, you know, you could spend all day doing it. Jeff played the parts as they were on the recordings. Now, occasionally he did take liberties and he'd step out and do a proper solo now and then. But that was Into the Storm. At the end of Into the Storm, where it kind of breaks down and Steve's doing his solos on the album on Fly From Here. Jeff had a good, you know, 30-second, 1 minute Wakeman-esque solo that he threw into that. And that was, you know, a nice Ripley speedy thing going on. That was, geez, he can do this stuff. That's fantastic. He had an intro to Wondrous Stories where he was just doing a quick piano solo. I think that was probably in place of each of the band members doing their own solos, because the only one who really did a solo was Steve. I think when they were playing Fly From Here, you know, half an hour's worth of that, so something had to give. It was the solos, and he did a great piano sort of that. And Starship Trooper, he after spending most of the time at his keyboards, he came out, you know, front center stage on the guitar.
Yeah,
and awesome solo. So the thing was, he can play these solos, he can pull them off. And I think he just chooses not to do that a lot of the time.
Mm, mm.
He's just the glue holding the music together, where there are a few parts in the background that need to be done. But when he wants to, he can pull out these solos, and I was gratified to see that.
Fantastic. Okay, well, what about the as you might say, the core of the band, Alan, Chris, and Steve?
Oh, they're fine. I don't even have to mention them.
Yeah.
You know, Alan and Chris were locked in as usual as the Yes rhythm section that you know and love, and then Steve was on top of his game. I noticed I'd read about some slower tempos, and I'd heard, I guess, some of the slower tempos as well in some of the YouTube clips I'd seen from the tour of last year. And I remember on I think it was yesfans.com, even Jeff had a post there about discussing the slower tempos. But actually, I think those slower tempos had slightly sped up this time around and to the original tempos. So I don't know what's caused that.
Right. I mean, I think those are the sorts of things that when you watch these dodgy YouTube videos that you can, you know, it's easy to criticize that kind of thing. You can even, you know, make a reference to the original record that you've got sitting by your side and compare it to the video. And that's not, you know, if you're not there in the venue actually experiencing it, you don't really have any right to criticize, I don't think. And different tempos work in different buildings as well, I suppose.
I mean, one of the things that I never got on those YouTube videos before was Chris's bass pedals, the Taurus bass synth sound that he kicks in at a number of places. In that venue, it shook the venue. It shook the seats. When those notes kicked in, you felt them through your chest.
Yeah, yeah.
That was something I hadn't realized before, and I don't think I noticed as much. And the last time I saw them in the bigger venue,
right?
But when Chris hit those pedals, the sound went through you, you know. And there's more of an emotional hit there. I mean, that's an example of something which you only get being at the show. I was even listening to some of the In the Present Tour official recording this afternoon to jog my memory, and listening to some of those tracks where I know Chris has got this monstrous sound, and it didn't come through in my little earphones I was listening to this thing on. So there is a lot that's lost.
Yeah, I mean, there's the physical presence of the man anyway, but then, as you say, when the bass starts hitting you in the chest, you know you're at a real event.
Absolutely.
One of the things which was remarkable on the YouTube videos that I've seen was the reaction of the Sydney fans. Now, people around the world are passionate about Yes music, but this lot just seemed to go crazy.
Look, I think I was fortunate to be at, it was just an amazing show with the right combination of things. Now, look, Yes earned that applause. They worked it. They earned it. They might have got it anyway, but it was, you know, a universal standing ovation. And I think it started towards the end around Heart of the Sunrise, because I was trying to map these things out and notice I could feel the room lifting up during Heart of the Sunrise. And from then on, the crowd was, I think it surprised the band.
Yeah.
The reaction they got at the end of the show. And at the end of the encore, there was enough applause there, enough build up after Roundabout that I actually thought, you know, if they've got something else to play, they would probably play it, because they're still very surprised at how passionate the response was.
I think that even came over in the YouTube video. There's someone that actually took a video of the reaction of the crowd at the end, which is remarkable, and pointed it at the stage, and you could see the pleasure on the band's faces there. It was fantastic.
Yeah, I remember that one of the last things that Chris said was he thanked everyone for their loyalty.
Yes, yeah.
Over the years. So, and that definitely came through.
Excellent. Well, after the concert was over, you managed to get into a party. Now, this wasn't the official meet and greet party, was it? This was an additional party, I think.
I think this was the same one.
Ah, right.
Now, somehow the Yes Fans organisation, that's where the Z... Yes Fans, Australia, New Zealand. Now, there's a bloke called Brian Draper and Robert Forbes, and there are others too, but somehow they managed to convince the promoter and Yes's management and Yes to have this meet and greet afterwards with about 70 people. And that was wonderful, and I thank everyone involved for making that happen, just because I got to be part of it. So.
Yeah. Now, did all members of the band turn up for that?
Well, so I got in there, and I think Alan was the first to come out. well, as you might expect after a performance of that caliber and that energy, he seemed a bit dazed.
Yeah.
He seemed a little bit tired. It seemed like he could probably use a drink. Alan and Jeff were the first out. You've really got a feel for these guys at these kind of events. You know, you've got a bunch of men ready and waiting with CDs, with posters, just all wanting autographs and so on. It's got to be a fairly impersonal experience, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So how did they seem? Did you get to speak to all of them?
I briefly spoke to all of them. I briefly spoke to Jeff, briefly spoke to Alan, and Chris turned up at that point. Chris is great. He headed straight towards the bar.
Mm-hmm.
So he knew that he had a drink. That was just where he happened to wind up.
Yeah, yeah.
I actually took my Rickenbacker bass pick guard down to Sydney with me.
Right.
Incredibly happy that Chris signed it.
Great.
Not knowing who I was, probably with the expectation it might end up on eBay. It's tried to place on my wall in the music room now, and I put it back, and I'm scared to play it now because I'm scared the autograph might rub off. Chris came out, and then John Davison came out, and John Davison, you know, absolutely lovely guy.
Hmm. I've heard other people saying that.
I had a quick chat with John and found out how he was going with his and he's still fitting in the band Glasshammer, and he was still working with Eddie. I think he just put some vocals down for the latest Glasshammer album he mentioned.
Right.
He's fitting that in with the Yes duties at the moment.
Right. That must be a pretty tall order.
Yeah, but he's a lovely, lovely guy.
Great. And as listeners to the podcast will already know, because they would have heard it on the beginning of this interview, you managed to get him to say something into a recorder for the podcast.
I did. I told him who you were.
Yeah, great.
So I told him it was a podcast in the UK, and he was too happy to do it. And that's his first take, and he nailed it. So there you go.
Excellent. And he was just happy to do it and just agreed and got on with it.
He did. I didn't have to go through management. I didn't have to sort it.
Well, I would say I hope they don't hear it because they might get annoyed. But in another way, I definitely do hope they hear it because then they'll be listening to the podcast, which will be fantastic. Just before we wrap this up, which we'll have to do in a few minutes, what about your hopes for the future? How did the band seem to you? Did it seem to you like they were, you know, full of energy and maybe off into the studio? I mean, you can't tell, but would you like to see them off into the studio with New John? And would you like to see them back in Australia touring again?
Well, the second part of that question is a no-brainer, of course. They felt like a full, complete working unit. You know, you had the three of them, the usual guys, all locked in, all in sync. Jeff was fitting in like he'd always been there. Now, Jeff had some good interplay going with Chris at some point, so you could tell that these guys, you know, were happy being around each other. Even Jeff and Steve had their moments. And John, yeah, this was John's fifth show. I think he started out in New Zealand. I think it went New Zealand, Perth, Byron Bay. I could be wrong, Melbourne, then Sydney. This was just his fifth show, and, you know, if he's like that after five shows, he was just fitting in like a natural. I didn't have the opportunity to see the band with Benoit David in there, unfortunately. So I can't compare their performances, but John was a natural. So I would love to see this that lineup go through and record the next album. I'm not sure what John's writing abilities are like. I'd love to see what John's input on the lyrics would be like.
Well, yeah, I think he does write and has written, so maybe that's a possibility. I mean, of course, with Fly From Here, it was based on material from the 80s, but it would be fantastic to think, although I'm not very hopeful, but it would be fantastic to think that they could, you know, start from scratch and produce some really original new stuff.
Well, Into the Storm, I think that was an example of one they came up with in the studio. And that for me is probably the strongest track on Fly From Here. So there's plenty of stuff in the old world left to come out, I reckon.
Yeah, great. Well, listen, they ought to get you in on the writing duties, of course, Ben. And do you want to just
certain people such as you have said that, And I think you're the only one, so we'll keep it at that.
But just before we go, tell us about what your plans are. I know that your latest album has been released on vinyl now, so tell us how that's going and what your plans for your musical future are.
So we just put out the vinyl version. It's a lovely gatefold sleeve by Mr. Roger Dean.
That's right.
And it is available through my website, bencraven.com or bencraven.bandcamp.com. And at the moment, I'm rehearsing in a three-piece configuration. I've got to put this stuff out there live, and we're working on it. It's just guitar, bass, drums at the moment. I'm doubling up on some keys. Very interesting for me because we're having to change the bass lines to fill in for the musical information the keys would normally do. So it's actually getting a bit more melodic bass in there. It's what we've got to do in a three-piece.
Absolutely. Well, let us know when you go out on the road with that. I do encourage all listeners to get over to bencraven.com and get hold of Ben's music, which is great stuff. And finally, Ben, thank you very much for the audio that you managed to capture from John and also for your comments about the show. It's been fantastic.
Well, thank John very much for doing that. He's very gracious and good-humoured.
Great. So thanks, Ben, again. It's fantastic to talk to you. I'm sure we'll talk again in the future. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Kevin. It's great. Great to talk to you again.
So that's about it for this week. Thanks so much for listening. Next week should be part two of the Yes Rarities series. Do tune in for that. In the meantime, please get involved at www.yesmusicpodcast.com, on Twitter at Yes Music Podcast, by sending an email to show@yesmusicpodcast.com, by uploading a file or recording a voicemail message via the site, or by leaving a voicemail on 0844 579 6949 using the mailbox number 39417. So until next time, just remember, whatever your progressive rock question, the answer is yes.